In Daniel chapter 10, old Daniel is still praying. In Daniel chapter 10, old Daniel is not done praying for his people. We've learned a lot about prayer by watching Daniel pray in this book of Daniel. Daniel prayed in chapter 2, and God revealed the king's dream and the true interpretation of the king's dream to Daniel. Daniel faithfully prayed in chapter 6 and got thrown to the lions for it and saved from those same lions by that same Lord. Last week in Daniel chapter 9, Daniel was desperately praying for the end of Israel's exile as Jeremiah had prophesied in his book. And the Lord answered by sending the angel Gabriel to inform Daniel not just that God will perfectly keep his promises, but that he has a perfect plan to fix not just the exile after 70 years, but to fix everything in his perfect timing, what he called 77s, whatever they are. And the Lord is perfectly on time. Well, as we open Daniel chapter 10, old Daniel is still praying. A few years have gone by. Some things have changed. God's plan is still being worked out in human history. And Daniel is still praying. And God is still answering. In fact, in answer to his prayer, Daniel has perhaps the wildest encounter with the Lord of the whole book. And that's saying a lot, isn't it? What a life Daniel lived. What things God showed him. And what things we can learn from him and his book. We've reached the last bit of the book of Daniel. These last three chapters are actually all about the same thing, the fourth and last vision that God gave to Daniel. There was one central vision in chapter 7, the Ancient of Days, one focusing vision in chapter 8, one super enigmatic vision in chapter 9, and then this last one is the longest one, chapters 10, 11, and 12. It's going to take us a few weeks to work our way through it. I thought about just preaching one two-hour sermon, but I think I'll just break it up into chunks, just like whoever put in the chapter numbers did. But keep that in mind as we work through it, okay? Chapters 10, 11, and 12 are all one thing. In fact, chapter 10 is just preparation. It's just getting Daniel and us ready to receive the content of that prophecy of the future in chapters 11 and 12. The sermon title for today is Before Your God. And I pulled those words from verse 12. If you're looking for where did he get the text, the title for this week, I pulled it out of verse 12 where Daniel's heavenly visitor tells Daniel that he has come in response to Daniel's prayers before his God. It's actually the only verse in chapter 10 that includes a divine name. So I zeroed in on that because I've been trying to focus on the names of God as I've titled these sermons. Because this chapter is not ultimately about Daniel or about his prayers or even about the mysterious spiritual beings that we'll learn about as we read it. This chapter is ultimately about Daniel's God, who is also ours. Let's start in verse 1. I like the bells coming from the other room. Kind of sounds like a flashback, you know. All right, verse 1. In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a revelation was given to Daniel, who was called Belteshazzar. Its message was true, and it concerned a great war. The understanding of the message came to him in a vision. At that time, I, Daniel, mourned for 3 weeks. I ate no choice food, no meat or wine touched my lips, and I used no lotions at all until the 3 weeks were over. As you can see here, old Daniel is still praying, and he's still praying desperately. When this chapter opens, Daniel informs us that he's been mourning for 3 whole weeks. Now, literally, that says 3/7 of days. So it's that word we learned about last week, Shavua, a set of seven. But here it's specifically a seven, he says, a 7 of days. So you don't get You don't get confused, right? So this is a literal 3-week period that Daniel has been mourning. 21 days. Daniel has gone on a partial fast. No choice food, no meat, no wine, no skin cream for his cracked and dry Jewish skin under the harsh Babylonian sun. It's kind of like a return to how he was in chapter 1, when Daniel refused the king's rich food during the wise man training period. 3 weeks, he's back to water and vegetables once again. And he's praying. And he's praying. And he's praying. Why is Daniel praying so desperately? Doesn't say, does it? But we can guess. For one thing, Daniel is just a man of prayer. He's been praying for decades and he's not going to stop now. But the timestamp on verse 1 might give us a good clue as to why in particular he's praying like this now. When did this prayer happen? Verse 1 says it was in the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia. Now, I think that means the third year that Cyrus, who was high king over Persia, ruled over Babylon. Not the third year that Cyrus was king of Persia, but that Cyrus was the king over Babylon. He took over Babylon in 539 BC, when the writing was on the wall for Belshazzar. And he put Darius the Mede in charge of Babylon in 539 BC. Darius is not mentioned here, perhaps because he's died already. He was already 62 when he took over. Or maybe verse 1 emphasizes Cyrus because of what else Cyrus did in his first year over Babylon. Anybody remember what he did in his first year that he was king over Babylon? We said it last week. What? He told the Jews what? They could go home. We talked about this last week. You can read about it in the book of Ezra. Cyrus decreed that the Jews could go home. And nearly 50,000 of them took him up on it. I wonder how many of them passed through the Ishtar Gate as they made the 600 plus mile trek back to Judah to rebuild their city and even to rebuild their temple. Did Daniel go home? No, he didn't. He did not pass through the Ishtar Gate and head west to Judah. In verse 4, we'll find him north and east of Babylon, standing at the Tigris River. Daniel stayed behind and prayed and prayed and prayed. This is 3 years later. So that makes it about 536 BC. How old is Daniel in 536 BC? Curtis, you're our human calculator. He's like, don't call me that. You're going to call me math every week. I don't know. Well, we don't know how old he was when he was taken into captivity. Let's say he was 15 in 605 BC. What does that make him now? Yeah, more like 83. Yeah. Or 84. And old Daniel has decided that he's going to fast and pray. Daniel's probably gotten some bad news from back home. Yes, the people went back home and started to rebuild, but if you read the book of Ezra, you'll find out that right about this time, they stopped rebuilding the temple. Read Ezra chapters 4 through 6. At this exact moment, they stopped. They've gotten sidetracked. They've gotten stalled. They've encountered opposition, and they kind of gave up for a while. It's just a guess, but I would not be surprised to find out that Daniel has heard about their lack of progress, and he's been discouraged. Daniel has been receiving visions for a few years now that tell him that there are terrible things in store for his people, and it seems like it's already coming true. So he mourns, he fasts, and he prays. He, in the words of verse 12, humbles himself before his God. I've got just 2 points of application this morning, and here's the first one. Humble yourself before your God. What an example for you and me, right? Dare to be a Daniel and continue to care about the pain of the people of God. Dare to be a Daniel and continue to pour yourself out in prayer, humbling yourself before your God. We sang it this morning. Joe, thank you for picking that song. Humble thyself in the sight of the Lord. That's a lot easier to sing and say than it is to do. But Daniel shows us the way. Daniel could have just sat back at this point in his life, couldn't he? He could have said, I've done my time. I've served my people. I've been praying and prophesying and representing my people in the highest courts of the nations for decades and decades. I'll let somebody else do it now. I'm retired from prayer ministry. God has told me that he's got a perfect plan on a perfect timetable, so I'll just let him do it now. But no. As much as Daniel trusts God's perfect plan, Daniel also knows that his people are suffering and they need someone to pray for them. And they need someone to try to understand what is going on. And they need someone to fight for them in prayer. Verse 1 said that this vision is true and concerns a great war, a great struggle, a great conflict. And this is Daniel's way of fighting in this war. He prays. He humbles himself before his God. And he prays. How about you and me? Are we praying? Are we humbling ourselves before our God? Do we get on our knees? There's a war going on, a spiritual war. Are we just sitting on the sidelines and letting other people fight it? Who are you praying for right now? Who's on your list? You praying for missionaries like those people on the back wall, like Jim and Kay Panaggio? Are you praying for the persecuted church, our brothers and sisters who are suffering for the name of Jesus around the world? Are you praying for your local church, for the people in the pew next to you, or the people on the other side of the building here today? Do you receive those prayer emails that Denise sends out, and do you pray for them when you read them? Are you praying for your family, especially for their spiritual condition, for their discipleship, for their citizenship in the kingdom of kingdoms? Are you praying, like we did this morning, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven? To really pray like that, not just to say the words, but to pray like that, requires humility. Daniel could have been the proudest man around. I mean, he's been like the top guy of not just of the Jews, but in this foreign country, he's been the top guy for decades. But instead of being proud, he humbles himself before his God. And God answered. Boy, did God answer. Look at verse 4. On the 24th day of the first month, as I was standing on the bank of the great river, the Tigris, I looked up, and there before me was a man dressed in linen, with a belt of the finest gold around his waist. His body was like chrysolite, his face like lightning, his eyes like flaming torches, his arms and legs like the gleam of burnished bronze, and his voice like the sound of a multitude. Wow. I can't imagine, can you? What a glorious being this was that just showed up. How radiant and marvelous he was. Heather Joy pointed out to me how much light there is here. Not only is he wearing linen like a priest, but he's wrapped around the middle in shining gold. And his upper body shines like a precious gemstone, whichever one it actually is. It's hard to translate this Hebrew word here. Some versions say topaz. Some say beryl. Some say yellow jasper. Nobody's quite sure, and I think that might be on purpose because it's just beyond description. Whatever exact gemstone it is, it's amazing. It's like he's made of a precious metal and like a gemstone kind of glows from within, right? That's how it looks. That's how it is. And his face is like lightning. What does that mean? His face is like lightning? That's brightness itself. If you've ever seen lightning, then you close your eyes and you can still see it. That's his face. And then his eyes themselves, so his face is like lightning, but out of his eyes, they're like flaming torches. What is that like? Fire's coming out of his eyes? and his arms and his legs are shiny bronze. This person is dazzling. And his voice, it's like the sound of a great crowd, like Beaver Stadium full of 120,000 screaming fans. That's this one being's voice, deep and loud and forceful and tremendous. And it echoes and echoes and echoes and echoes. Here's a reason to humble ourselves. Because our God is glorious. Now, who is this person? In verses 4, 5, and 6. It doesn't say, does it? We're back to that problem that we've seen again and again of identification. There's no naming of names, no who is who. And so we may need to pull out our helpful little phrase. Go ahead and say it to your neighbor. I don't know, and that's okay. Or maybe better, I'm not sure, and that's okay. A lot of biblical scholars think that this is the angel Gabriel. Once again, he showed up in chapter 8. He showed up in chapter 9. Maybe it's Gabriel again in chapter 10 with a fuller description of how he appears at this time. If he's the same person talking at the end of this chapter, then he works in cooperation with the angel Michael. So Gabriel's not a bad guess, one of the two angels named in the Bible. But a lot of other biblical scholars think this is someone else. They think that this is not just an angelophany, like Greg Strand taught us at Stay Sharp, but a Christophany. They think this is the pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus Christ. They think this is the Son of Man before he became a man. And that's quite possible too. The best argument for that is the parallels between these two verses and the way that Jesus is described by the Apostle John in Revelation chapter 1. This afternoon, get out your Bible, read Revelation chapter 1 with one finger in Revelation 1 and one finger in Daniel 10 and flip between the two and see the similarities. They are quite striking. And there, Jesus is even called one like a son of man, right out of the book of Daniel. I'm not 100% sure that this is Jesus here, because of how later in the chapter he seems to be a little hindered and to need help from Michael. So that gives me a little pause. It may be that he just allows himself to need that help, or maybe at the end of the chapter is actually talking about a second heavenly being that is an angel. And this is Jesus in verses 4 through 6. But I kind of, for those reasons, lean towards this being some kind of angel. Perhaps a higher angel even than Gabriel and Michael. The angel of the Lord. It doesn't say. And I'm not quite sure. And that's okay. Because it doesn't really matter. Because whoever this is, he's from God and reflects God's glory. This being shows how resplendent God is, how beautiful, how dazzling. If this isn't God the Son, then God the Son is all of this and infinitely more. And he's come to reveal God's own secrets to Daniel and eventually to you and me. I can't imagine what this was like. Keith and Heather, I want to hear how the Snack and Yak kids draw these pictures for Snack and Yak, okay? So make sure you share. Oh, you've already done yours, okay. Big kid Keith over there. I almost wish I could have been there until I see how it affected everyone who was there. Look at verse 7. I, Daniel, was the only one who saw the vision. The men with me did not see it, but such terror overwhelmed them that they fled and hid themselves. They couldn't hack it. They couldn't see it, but they felt it, and it was the scariest thing they've ever felt. Verse 8, so I was left alone, gazing at this great vision. I had no strength left. My face turned deathly pale. And I was helpless. Then I heard him speaking with that voice, with the sound of a multitude. And as I listened to him, I fell into a deep sleep, my face to the ground. Is this how we think about God? I think we often only think about God in terms like Psalm 23, the gentle shepherd, and he is that, but he's this too. We often can think about God only as a soft thing, like a doddering old grandpa with a white beard who couldn't hurt a fly, Santa Claus. That's not what he's like. He's the Ancient of Days. He's the one like a son of man. He's the King of Kingdoms. He is like nothing else, and he is terrifying. He is awesome. He is overwhelming. And we should humble ourselves before him. Daniel's fallen down into a deep, deep sleep, face to the ground. 83, 84 years old. He's lying there, face down. Probably looks like Daniel is dead. He's seen a vision of the glory of God, and he is overawed and undone. And then somebody touches him. Somebody's going to touch Daniel three times in this chapter. Verse 10, verse 16, verse 18. Maybe the same person as verses 5 and 6. Imagine being touched by that being, the gemstone, blazing, glorious, dazzling being. Or maybe he's touched by a new person, an angel. Either way, it wakes him up. Verse 10, a hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. He said, Daniel, you who are highly esteemed, consider carefully the words I am about to speak to you, and stand up, for I have now been sent to you. And when he said this to me, I stood up trembling. Do you see it? He's been face down, then he's on his hands and his knees, and then he's standing, but on trembling legs. This is no walk in the park for Daniel. This is no sweet and easy moment for old Daniel. In a lengthy life full of amazing and scary moments, this may be the hardest time of Daniel's life. And he needs strengthening. The whole rest of this chapter is all about Daniel being strengthened to receive the rest of the vision. And we can be strengthened by it as well. Be strengthened before your God. It's strengthening even while it was overwhelming, right? It's strengthening to know that your God is this glorious. You know your God is glorious, right? Daniel was knocked off his feet by the grandeur of this vision, but he also got from it a view of God's power. And if God's power is revealed like this, then God can fulfill all of his promises and answers to all of Daniel's prayers. He can help the people in Judah who have fallen behind in rebuilding the temple. And he can do everything he's going to promise in chapters 11 and 12. Church, your God is glorious. Be strengthened by that. Here's something else to strengthen you. Your God treasures you. Did you see how Daniel is addressed in verse 11? It's the same word Gabriel used in chapter 9, verse 23. Here he says, verse 11, Daniel, you who are highly esteemed. Now some translations say beloved, some say greatly loved, some say precious. The Hebrew word there is chemduth, chemduth. It refers to something that is craved or coveted, something that is desired. It's something you treasure, like something you really, really want. It's saying that Daniel was highly treasured by God. This being sends this message that the Ancient of Days feels this way about Daniel. He's treasured. He's esteemed highly. He's beloved. Perhaps he was esteemed for his great faith and faithfulness. Daniel was special in that way. This is the only place in the Bible where someone is said to be esteemed in this way. But we know from the rest of the Bible how God feels about us, don't we? Do you know how God feels about you? The Bible says that we are God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved. You're beloved. You're beloved of the Lord. The Bible says God so loved that he gave his one and only son, his beloved son. We know how he feels about his son. He gave him up for us all. Jesus died on the cross because he so treasured us. God so treasured you. Draw strength from that. Be strengthened today from your God's love for you. And he shows that by answering your prayers. Your God is answering your prayers. Look at verse 12. Daniel is standing up. He's trembling. Verse 12. Then he continued, "Do not be afraid, Daniel. Since the first day that you set your mind to gain understanding and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come in response to them." When was that? How long has Daniel been on this partial fast? 21 days, right? I put up the 3 to see if anybody said 3 days, right? 21 days. 3 sevens of days. How long was God listening to Daniel? The whole time. He says, "Your words were heard." Your words were heard. Your words were heard, and I have come in response to them. Friends, our God is a listening God. We talked about this last week. Our God is not impassive and implacable. Sometimes we say God is a rock, and by that we don't mean that he's not listening. Like, he's a rock who listens, if you can imagine. He's a rock because he's solid and trustworthy, but he's a listening God. He has, so to speak, ears on us. He's listening when we pray. He's not deaf. 3 weeks Daniel's been praying. Week one, his words were heard. Week two, his words were heard. Week three, his words were heard. There's no static in the line. This heavenly being has been sent in response to his words. And the God who listened to Daniel, church, is listening to us when we pray. Do you need to hear that today? Have you been praying recently and wondering if anybody's listening? Have you been demoralized because you aren't seeing the answers you're hoping for? Hear this. Be strengthened by this. Your words were heard. Keep praying. Sometimes it seems like nobody's listening, but we know the Lord is the whole time. And in verse 13, the heavenly being actually peels back a corner of the curtain to tell Daniel why it took so long for him to get this particular answer. In chapter 9, Gabriel got there before Daniel's prayer was over. But here the answer was delayed. Look at verse 13. "Since the first day, your words were heard, and I've come in response to them, but the prince of the Persian kingdom resisted me 21 days. Then Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me because I was detained there with the king of Persia. Now I have come to explain to you what will happen to your people in the future, for the vision concerns a time yet to come." Huh. Now that is something entirely new, isn't it? You think you've seen it all in the book of Daniel, and then he's got a new surprise to pop out at you. And this is something that doesn't really show up anywhere else in the Bible outside of Daniel chapter 10. This heavenly being says that he was resisted for 21 days. He was withstood or blocked or hindered by the prince of the Persian kingdom. Who is that? I'm not sure, and that's okay, right? The word for prince there is Tsar, like we learned about in chapter 8, where we were learning about the Tsar of Tsarim, the prince of princes. A Tsar is a chieftain or leader or a king of some kind. This Tsar is the Tsar of the Persian kingdom. Now that could be Cyrus or Cyrus's son. But verse 1 already named Cyrus. I don't know why he would not be named here if it's him. And how could Cyrus or his human son withstand this heavenly being? I don't think he could. So that leads most biblical scholars to think that this prince of the Persian kingdom refers to a demonic being, a powerful demonic spirit that is at work in the kingdom of Persia. Sometimes we call those territorial spirits because they seem to be tied to a particular kingdom. I think it might be better to call them empiric spirits, because it's less about geography than it is about the socio-political aspect of a kingdom. Not so much place as people. We don't know that much about this reality. I think that's on purpose. It's good that we don't, because we couldn't handle it if we did. But it strengthens us to know that it's going on where we can't see. Church, your God is working where you cannot see. Verse 1 said that there is a great war. And now we know that there's a great war in the unseen realms. Unbeknownst to us, these powerful beings are duking it out behind the scenes. The prince of the Persian kingdom actually hinders the one speaking from arriving to Daniel for 21 days. But then Michael, also called a prince, a chief czar, and we know he's an angel, Jude 1, Daniel 12. Michael shows up and helps the speaker to break free and come to Daniel. What was that like? I don't know. And that's okay. It's more than okay. I couldn't handle it if I did know. Notice what this says we should do about these empiric spirits. Absolutely nothing at all. Daniel does not tell us that we should try to learn their names or ranks or dominions or go to battle with them ourselves. He just peels back a little part of the curtain and then he closes the curtain again. Daniel doesn't tell us to do anything about them at all. This is one of those few places in the Bible where we even get a peek. And I think the main point is just to tell us that there's still a lot going on behind the curtain. There's a cosmic conflict. We do live in a spiritual war zone. We do need to know that. As Paul says in Ephesians, our struggle is not against flesh and blood. Often feels like it. But against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. But Paul does not say, let's figure out their names. Let's figure out their kingdoms. Let's name them and talk to them and go to battle against them directly. And Jesus doesn't tell us to do it in the Gospels, and they don't do it in the book of Acts. No, he says basically that we clothe ourselves with this gospel truth and then we live out the Christian life and we keep on praying. And we trust that God will handle all the stuff behind the scenes. All the stuff that may affect us, but we cannot see. Does that strengthen you? It does me. It's a great relief. Of course, it's scary. It's scary to think that we have these powerful unseen enemies. Is there a prince of the kingdom of America that is dedicated to oppressing us here in this nation? I don't know. But I do know there's a war going on. And I know who is winning it. Joe said it earlier. I know that Jesus has actually already won it. Jesus has disarmed the powers and authorities, and he made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them by the cross. That's Colossians 2:15. Our celebration choir is preparing a special song right now for you for when we celebrate the Lord's Supper next on Palm Sunday, where the phrase we sing over and over is, And the devil went down. And the devil went down. The war is won, even if there's still some mop-up battles to fight. I think it's important, again, to point out that none of this means that God is not sovereign. Even in Daniel chapter 10, just because there's a war raging behind the scenes does not mean that God is not in control. I know that's a lot of double negatives. Let me say it this way. It's not that Satan and God are somehow equal in power and wrestling with one another, sometimes one winning and sometimes the other. That may be somewhat true on the angelic level, as we see this peak, but not on the divine level. See, God is God and Satan's just a wannabe. The Lord is the Ancient of Days, unbothered by these great evils, an ultimate judge over them. As we learned in chapter 4, God is the Most High, who lives forever. His dominion is an eternal dominion. His kingdom endures from generation to generation. He does as he pleases with the powers of heaven and the peoples of the earth. No one, not the prince of Persia or the prince of Greece or Satan himself, can hold back his hand or say to him, "What have you done?" God allows this unseen war to rage for his own wise purposes. And when he says that it's time for it to all be over, that's when it will end. At this point in the story, Michael has helped the heavenly messenger to get free and to come to Daniel to explain the future. Look at verse 14 again. "Now I have come to explain to you what will happen to your people in the future, for the vision concerns a time yet to come." And that's what we're going to see in chapters 11 and 12. There's more conflict, more war on the way. We've kind of seen the war in the heavenlies. Next week, we're going to see more of the war on earth, both behind the scenes and on the stage of human history. He's going to predict things from right then and there all the way to eternity. And it was more than Daniel could stand. He just about falls over again. Verse 15. "While he was saying this to me, I bowed with my face toward the ground and was speechless. Then one who looked like a man touched my lips, and I opened my mouth and began to speak. I said to the one standing before me, 'I'm overcome with anguish because of the vision, my Lord, and I'm helpless. How can I, your servant, talk with you, my Lord? My strength is gone, and I can hardly breathe.'" This was so hard on Daniel. He's overwhelmed. He's like a rag doll. He can't hold his breath. He just about can't take what he's hearing. But this one, like a son of man, touches his mouth. Every time Daniel gets touched, he can do just a little bit more. Here he talks, and what he says is, "How can I talk? I can hardly breathe. My strength is gone." Verse 18. "Again, the one who looked like a man touched me and gave me strength. 'Do not be afraid, O man highly esteemed.'" There it is again, treasured. "He said, 'Peace. Be strong now. Be strong.' When he spoke to me, I was strengthened and said, 'Speak, my Lord, since you've given me strength.'" I love that. "Be strong now. Be strong." I almost gave this sermon this title. Be strong now. Be strong. It's the same root word over and over again in the Hebrew. It's chazak, chazak. He touched me and gave me chazak. "Do not be afraid, O man highly esteemed. Peace, be chazak now. Be chazak. When he spoke to me, I was chazak and said, 'Speak, my Lord, since you have given me chazak.'" Be strong now. Be strong. Did Daniel feel strong? Only when he was touched. What are you facing right now where you need strength? I'm sure that everybody here has something big, something daunting that is staring you at the face. Some of you have 10 of them. Daniel had to receive one last long and scary vision, and he needed strength. He needed chatzak for it. Where did he get it? Did he get it from himself? He kind of boost himself up. When he says, "Be strong now, be strong," does he mean on your own? In your own strength? No, he got it from his God. Because he knew that his God was working out his perfect plan. Your God is working out his perfect plan. And he's perfectly on time. In verse 20, the messenger speaks again to Daniel and tells him what is happening next. Look at verse 20. So he said, "Do you know why I have come to you? Soon I will return to fight against the prince of Persia, and when I go, the prince of Greece will come. But first I will tell you what is written in the book of truth. No one supports me against them except Michael, your prince, and in the first year of Darius the Mede, I took my stand to support and protect him." Apparently, this heavenly messenger is going now back into battle. And at some point, the prince of Persia will go down and the prince of Greece will come up on the scene. And that tracks, doesn't it, with everything we've been learning about the successive kingdoms? The silver kingdom of the Medes and the Persians will be followed by the bronze kingdom of the Greeks. And the beast like a bear will disappear. And the beast like a leopard will rule. And the ram will go down. And the goat will rise again across the earth, race across the earth. That's a lot of what chapter 11 will be about. And before he goes, the heavenly messenger will tell Daniel what is in the book of truth, or the truthful writings. It's not so much like an actual physical book as a record of what is definitely going to come, what God's reliable plan looks like. And he mysteriously tells Daniel that there is no one else fighting on his level except for Michael, Daniel's prince, perhaps Israel's prince, Daniel's people. And they've been fighting together side by side since the first year of Darius the Mede, when Persia took over Babylon in 539 BC. Daniel is now strengthened to hear what God has planned for his people. It will be hard for him to receive, but he's ready, because his God has touched him, because his God is glorious, because his God treasures him, because his God is answering his prayers, because his God is working where he cannot see, because his God is working out his perfect plan with perfect timing. Be strong now. Be strong before your God.